ceremony today honors fallen soldiers. This is the Northwest Passage on KLCC. I'm Tiffany Eckert. They added the name of one soldier from Southern Oregon who died in Iraq. The holiday weekend has been wet and cool in some parts of Oregon. Flooding is still a threat. According to census data, more young people call the American West home than any other region. Joe Mall is executive director of the McKinsey River Trust. He's here to tell us about their work to protect critical habitat and scenic lands, especially watersheds. The Trust is holding a benefit concert, The Living River, this Friday at The Shed in Eugene. And mixed voices. It's the Northwest Passage on KLCC, but now this update from NPR News. It's 4 o'clock. Welcome to the Northwest Passage on KLCC. Good afternoon. I'm Tiffany Eckert. A ceremony at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs honored fallen soldiers on this Memorial Day. KLCC's Angela Kellner reports.
Every Memorial Day and Veterans Day, a solemn event is held in Salem. The names of Oregon soldiers who've lost their lives are inscribed on the Afghan-Iraqi Freedom Memorial Wall. This year, 26-year-old Marine Sergeant Matthew DeYoung of Talent will be honored. He died February 18th in the Helmand province of Afghanistan. Mike Allegher is with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
We have many families that come back every time, even though they have already gone through the ceremony and their loved one is on the wall, they will come back and comfort others.
25-year-old Andrew Lara of Albany died in a non-combat related incident in Iraq last month. Allegher says Lara's family was not ready to attend the Monday event. 128 service members with ties to Oregon have died in Iraq or Afghanistan. For KLCC News, I'm Angela Kellner.
Oregonians are beginning a holiday weekend with wet, cold weather in many parts of the state, minor flooding in the Portland metro area, and large numbers of fields still too cold and wet to plant. The late spring is still producing wintry weather at high elevations. The state police say 7 people were injured Friday night in a crash during snowy conditions near Mount Hood. The National Weather Service said Saturday the Columbia River is still at about flood stage in Portland and Vancouver, Washington, and will be for several days longer. Flooding is expected in low-lying areas such as parking lots and recreation areas. If Oregon were to invert its tax structure, the state could raise nearly $2 billion a year. That's according to a recent study by United for a Fair Economy. KLCC's Rachel McDonald has more.
The study is called Flip It to Fix It, an immediate fair solution to state budget shortfalls. It suggests flipping Oregon's tax structures so the wealthiest pay the percentage of their income that low-income people are paying and vice versa. That would help the state raise $1.8 billion annually. Jody Weiser is with Tax Fairness Oregon.
We have one of the most progressive tax systems in the country in Oregon. And so I was surprised at the results of this research. I thought that it would be less productive in revenue for Oregon.
Weiser says she doubts flipping the tax structure would get much political backing in Oregon. The report says inverting tax structures in every state would bring in an additional $490 billion a year in new revenue across the country. For KLCC News, I'm Rachel McDonald.
There are plenty of people eager to help an Oregon inmate scheduled to be executed in August, even against his will. But those who wish to save his life could face an uphill battle if convicted killer Gary Haugen doesn't reverse his decision to waive his remaining appeals. Groups that oppose the death penalty say they hope to spare Haugen's life, even if he doesn't want to spare his own. They're appealing to Governor John Kitzhaber and evaluating legal options. But David Fendiki of the American Civil Liberties Union says it can be very difficult to prevent an inmate's execution if he says he wants it to proceed. The ACLU unsuccessfully tried to stop the 1996 execution of an inmate who waived appeals. The American West is home to more young people than any other region of the country, according to new data from the U.S. Census. Still, there are differences in the age demographics within our region. Correspondent Tom Bonsi reports.
Nationally, there's an overarching trend here. The population is aging. The trend is more noticeable in New England and the Midwest, but no state bucks the trend entirely, says Census Bureau statistician Lindsay Hoden. She spoke on a teleconference briefing.
The population aged 65 and over grew at a faster rate than the youngest ages. The growth in this age group was fueled by the aging of the baby boom population.
Hoden says places with more youthful demographics correlate with the size of the local Hispanic population. She says Latino families tend to be larger with more children. If you want to be around young people, you could also look to Idaho, Utah, or Alaska. Those states have three of the top four youngest populations. Washington hews closer to the national median age of 37 years old. Oregon is showing gray around the temples, with a median age more than a year older than the nation as a whole. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
Residents in Newport will see an increase in sewer and water rates. KLCC's Brandon Smith reports.
The next fiscal year begins on July 1st, and Newport's proposed budget for that year will be 10% less than this year. The budget calls for eliminating three positions, giving city employees a slight cost of living raise, and raising sewer rates by 5%, and raising water rates by 3%. The Newport News Times reports that Newport will leave the city lawyer position vacant, as well as a senior planner in the community development department and a police officer position. Police Chief Mark Miranda said with fewer officers, they will not be able to devote as much time to drug and identity theft issues. For KLCC News, I'm Brandon Smith.
When the last rose of summer pricks my finger and the hot sun chills me to the bone, when I can't hear the song for the singer and I can't tell my pillow from stone, I will walk alone by the black muddy river and sing me a song of my own. I will walk alone by the black muddy river and sing me a song. Sunshine hits the mountain and the stars start to splatter in the sky. When the moon hits the southwest horizon with the scream of an eagle.
Listening to the Northwest Passage on KLCC, I'm Tiffany Eckert. In 1989, a nonprofit land trust was formed to protect habitat and scenic areas in the Mackenzie Basin. The Mackenzie River Trust exists to acquire land through a variety of means and in partnership with landowners to protect it in perpetuity. My guest today is Joe Maul. He's executive director of the Mackenzie River Trust. Joe, welcome to the Northwest Passage.
Thanks, Tiffany, for having me here.
Yeah. The Mackenzie River Trust has been going for 21 years now.
Indeed.
So when did you come on board?
I've been here for a little over 6.5 years. I came here from Montana.
Remind listeners or let them know if they aren't familiar, what is the mission of the trust?
Well, the Mackenzie River Trust protects lands and the waters that flow through them for things like fish and wildlife habitat, water quality, recreational areas, view sheds, things that are considered public values.
What in the six and a half years since you've been there, talk a little bit about some of the highlights of the Trust's work. It may be things that happened before you got there, but that you picked up, or maybe something particularly cool that you've seen happen in your time.
Well, 6.5 years is the blink of an eye, but just before I arrived, the Mackenzie River Trust acquired about 900 acres of property where the Mackenzie and the Willamette Rivers come together, a place called Green Island, and that really transformed our organization from one that looked on small isolated parcels to one that was really plugged in to a number of things that was happening with clean water protection and fish and wildlife, particularly salmon. When you start to work at that level of close to 1,000 acres, it really changes your mindset on what you can achieve, the kind of projects you start to look at, and gives you both confidence as an organization and a greater sense of both the opportunities that are there as well as the challenges.
Do you see water as obviously we hear Mackenzie River Basin, it's implicit in the name of the trust, and also the fact that you've extended your work. You started in the Mackenzie River Basin, but you have moved out. Why don't we start with that, with talking about that? You saw a need, the trust saw a need to extend further, and where did you go?
Well, the Mackenzie River Trust has kept the name, but we work throughout Lane County, well into Douglas County and the Umpqua River. Up on the coast, we're getting pulled into Lincoln County and downstream on the Willamette River as well into Linn and Benton counties. And it's more than us wanting to expand. It has been landowners who've come to us and said, hey, we've heard about the work you've done in the Mackenzie Basin. We have similar sort of opportunities on the Long Tom River, on the main stem Willamette, at 10 Mile Creek south of Yahats. There are land trusts working across the state, like the Nature Conservancy or the Trust for Public Land. But in these areas, there hadn't been a small local community-based land trust like ours. So it was that local demand, local interest from landowners who were seeing the kind of success that we were having that expanded the organization's service area. And people have asked, well, why are you continuing to be the Mackenzie River Trust? And it's one we scratch our heads over quite often. The Mackenzie is such an incredible river, such a resource. It's an icon for many people. And so far, we haven't come up with another name. And so it hasn't been a big hurdle so far. We're still able to work because people care about water so fundamentally. The beautiful water of the Mackenzie starts crystal clear, stays clean as it comes all the way down to our drinking fountains. And I think over time, as there's more pressure in the region, those fundamental building blocks of our everyday, our economic development, clean water, starts so many things.
How do you think folks hear about you? You probably get phone calls from a diverse number and type of folk.
We do. It's often word of mouth. Landowners, especially in rural areas, tend to be pretty conservative. And it takes a time to put together a land deal, whether we're acquiring a parcel of land or we're working with a landowner on a conservation easement, something that restricts development in their favor. But as soon as that happens, landowners see that visibly there's not a great change, and yet it allows landowners to maybe solidify their operations a little bit more. And that word of mouth really does spread.
Yeah. Talk about some challenges, because there must be, in working with diverse types mm-hmm. and folks who might have quite varying opinions about things, maybe everything from conservationism to the ideals of timbering. Mm-hmm. So how do you work around those challenges? Or are they, in fact, challenges?
Oh, indeed. There are a lot of challenges, and the first of which is often just the resources to be able to the people to be able to get out and talk with all of the landowners that are interested in doing conservation work. There's always the challenge of budget, bringing enough money to the table to get work done. In Oregon, I still think there is still quite a legacy of the owl wars and the salmon wars, and blame flying from both sides, and development versus environment is something that, surprisingly, I've heard more here than it did, even in Montana, which was a big surprise to me. And I think that part of that is because economies have been so affected by so many things so drastically over the last 20 years that there's still a great deal of distrust. And the land trust approach to things, where we work with all people, anyone who has land and has an interest in the long-term public values associated with that land, whether or not it's producing timber or producing crops, whether it's producing clean water, fish and wildlife habitat. If those public values are at the table, let's talk about them. And so the challenge is often getting to that point where we can agree on, with a landowner who has a vision for a piece of property, what that vision is, and bringing other members of their family in and making sure that this is a significant decision. And are we really thinking this through well? And does this do well by the community? Probably the most personally challenging thing we deal with is having to tell some landowners, I'm sorry, we can't help you. Mm-hmm. There are far more landowners and far more pieces of property, really special properties, than any land trust or land conservation group can deal with. So we have to make choices on where to invest the resources that our donors give and what grantors give to us. And those can be difficult discussions at times.
What are the benefits to landowners? How do you pitch that to, or you know, if you even need to? They're probably the ones calling you, so they have some sense of this. But is it altruistic at the end of the day? Why folks care to put a piece of property in trust? And when we say in perpetuity, that usually does mean, as far as we are able to glean,
long
for
time.
Good.
Yeah, a long time. Yeah, the not quite joke is that there are two organizations recognized by the United States government who can deal with perpetuity. One is land trusts, and the other is cemeteries.
That's right. And death and taxes, right.
It as I say, they're serious decisions, and so you want to make sure you take the time to do it. It really varies. There's a range of interests. Sometimes landowners will call and say, hey, we have a piece of property. It's on the market. We have heard that you acquire properties with these sorts of values. Line up like any other buyer. There are others who will come to us and ironically say things like, you know, I really love my family. I'm not sure that they can handle the pressure of owning and managing this property after I'm gone. And I want to give them the infrastructure, the structure, the legal structure to ensure that they don't have to develop and to help from an estate tax perspective. There are tax incentives if someone donates property or a development right to us. At times, we'll bring money to the table, just like any other real estate player in the market. So it's the land deals themselves are as complex and as different and creative as the people that we deal with.
Well, Joe, when you talk about money, it's important to get right to the brass tacks of things, which is how you actually raise the money to be able to do this work. One way is through benefits.
Indeed.
There is a benefit concert this Friday. You came in to the music of Misty River. Our listeners hear them on KLCC often. And if you would, just let folks know just a little bit what they might get to hear at the Shed this Friday.
So this Friday at 7:30 at the Shed, Misty River and the fingerstyle guitarist Doug Smith will be playing. And it's a part of what we've developed as a Living River series. About 2 years ago, Barry Lopez, the notable nature writer in the area, he talked about thinking forward what it's going to take to work in communities in conservation. And he called for neighborhood conversations where we bring all sorts of people together, not an us against them, environment versus development, but bring the bus driver and the teacher and everybody. And so the Living River series is a way for us as real estate conservation folks to sort of step outside and say, these are ultimately values decisions. And what's the best way for us to gather and talk about values? It's through the arts. Last year we had an art event at the Jacobs Gallery. This year we're doing a concert and exploring rivers and water and natural areas through music. And boy, to have a group like Misty River, which has such a legacy here, to take this on is just a treat for all of us.
Definitely. They know it. Black Muddy Rivers, which you heard coming in. I want to thank you all very much for coming and talking with us about the work of the Trust as well as the benefit this Friday. Thanks on this Memorial Day, particularly. Joe Mall is Executive Director of the McKinsey River Trust. There'll be a benefit concert this Friday at the Shed Institute in Eugene, and tickets are still available.
Yes, they are.
All right. We'll go out with another Misty River song, and thanks again.
Thank you.
Tapping on my roof and wall. Mixed voices. Our lives are charged with story, memory, imagination. We wish to rouse you to share your imagination, your stories, your ear with someone not your age. Authors of all ages share theirs with you. Today,
Face.
My name is Martha Braisted Mackey. I'm a fourth grader at Eugene Gokwin Elementary, and I'm 10 years old, and my piece is titled Popcorn for Andrea. Popcorn with Andrea. Get it Wednesday after school. Sometimes I buy it, sometimes Andrea. The butteriest, saltiest, best. Last bit of mine goes to Andrea. She likes the pieces only half popped. Sitting on hard plastic chairs, doing our homework, brightening up rainy days with talk. Drawing if we finish, watching Andrea's laughing eyes, framed by a headband, chatting the whole time.
My name is Abby Reynolds. I'm 11 years old. I'm in fifth grade, and I go to McCormick Elementary School, and the name of my piece is Rice with Alyssa. We are at Alyssa's house, and we race to our plush red seats. Me in my t-shirt and soft pants, Alyssa in slip-ons and a thin sweater. Rice is served to us hot. The smell wafts up out of the glass-curved bowl and fills the room. Besides the warmth, the rice is soft and fresh. Alyssa talks with me in her quiet voice. I look at her face and I see happiness and energy. And we think about the coming events in the future.
My name is Ella Quinn. I'm 9. And I'm homeschooled, and the name of my piece is Shopping with Grandma. I hear buzzing in the distance, a crane lifting blocks. We are walking into the store. She will buy fabric, I will look. She can't make up her mind. Grandma says, "You can pick out something," and hands me a $5 bill. I go straight to the fabric I've been yearning to get, the purple one with stars on it. I dash to the counter and pay the man with the fluffy beard and scrunched up red face. He puts the fabric in a bag just as Grandma comes up behind me. She has a surprise, white kitty fabric. She will make a pillow for me out of it. Also, she has chocolate ice cream bars. She walks out with a smiley mouth and her brown eyes soft. We both laugh and drive away, her face still lit up with laughter.
Find out more about Mixed Voices by visiting www.ywalane.org.
This has been Mixed Voices, a Young Writers Association offering from authors of all ages. The last Monday of each month, writers consider a different topic. Next month,
Skin.
Weather on the Central Oregon coast tonight, scattered showers with lows near 45 degrees. Tuesday, showers are likely with highs around 60. In the Southern Willamette Valley tonight, a chance of showers with lows near 45. Tuesday, showers with a chance of thunderstorms and highs around 65. In Central Douglas County tonight, showers likely with lows in the 40s. Tuesday, rain is likely with a slight chance of thunderstorms and highs in the 60s. Tonight in Central Oregon, scattered showers, lows near 37. Tuesday, showers likely and a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon around 60. In Oregon State University, they are breaking ground Tuesday on a $14 million Student Success Center. OSU's Associate Vice Provost for Academic Success, Susie Brubaker-Cole, describes the 30,000-square-foot facility.
Really lovely three-story building close to the Reister Football Stadium and near the OSU Alumni Center, as well as near the South Campus dorms. There will be classrooms, study lounges, a computer cluster for students to work in. There'll be offices for academic counseling and tutoring sessions.
Originally, it was going to be for student athletes, but campus leaders agreed it was best to open it to everyone. The University of Oregon has been criticized for its study center that only allows non-athletes on the first floor. OSU Center is funded by state bonds and private donations. It is scheduled to be finished in June 2012. Oregon State Police troopers are continuing an investigation into a two-vehicle crash on the Beltline flyover that occurred Sunday. An adult Hispanic male was apprehended by Springfield police attempting to flee the scene. He's being treated for non-life-threatening injuries at the hospital. Police say alcohol was a factor in the crash. His name has not been released. Law enforcement agencies have increased patrols for safety belt violations and impaired drivers in a campaign that will last through June 5th. Lieutenant Greg Hastings with Oregon State Police says there are precautions that can be taken to ensure safety.
We know this afternoon is going to be a pretty difficult time with the increased traffic. Many travelers out on the highway, congestion in many areas, and hopefully people will be driving while they're alert, not be distracted. Obviously, have a sober driver behind the wheel and ensuring that everyone in their vehicle is safely restrained in safety belts and child safety seats.
So far this holiday weekend, there have been two fatalities in two separate accidents. While this is fewer than the six deaths that occurred last year, Hastings says even one is unacceptable. That's our report for this afternoon on the Northwest Passage. Production assistance from Rachel McDonald, Leetie Sharp, Ben Swetland, and Angela Kellner. I'm Tiffany Eckert. Enjoy your evening.
Support for this program comes from Sundance Natural Foods, locally owned and operated since 1970.